G'day, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast, powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'm your host, Sammy Gordon, and today, guys, we've got a bit of a brains trust in the room today. That includes Mr. Big Lukey Chusin and Mr. Paulie Carpiers, who has been recently requested to come back on after his sizzling investor story. Brains trust, boys, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Sammy. Always good to be back.
Lovely introduction.
No worries, as always. Pleasure. And we have dragged up from the dirty south, the man, the myth, not so much the legend, Mr. Jimmy Ibrahim, mate. Welcome back to the show.
G'day, Sammy boy, and g'day, listeners. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited about today's episode. Hot off,
mate.
Soon-to-be highest-rated episode. They're saying in the office,
mate,
this guy is breaking all the records. Not only is he a good-looking fella, but what an incredible story, Paulie K. Mate. It was great to hear your story, mate. Very insightful. A lot of things I didn't know about you, actually. Mm. So thanks for sharing that. How did it feel doing your investor story podcast?
It was good. It was very raw, very emotional at times, but no, just nice to sort of go through the journey together, and especially with all you guys. I've worked with you for a while now, but haven't gone onto that level. So no, very honored.
You know, what was funny, like, you guys weren't here when we obviously did the potty with Paulie, and as soon as we finished, I was like, man, thank you so much. Like, that was so raw, so real. And the producer stood up and she goes, I cried 3 times in that episode. And we're like, what the hell, really? And she's like, yeah. Like, it was super, super emotional. Like, she got very, very into it. She loved it as well. So, and the feedback from you guys out there, obviously, we know you guys love your investor stories, and hats off to you, Paulie, mate, for being raw, being real, and mate, having a good crack at it like you did.
No, thank you very much for, you know, bringing up.
A few people have been direct messaging me and asking me to put a poll up because they want to see what the people really want to see. They said you were so natural on your first podcast experience that the co-host should be changed. Oh. They said that you should be coming in and actually leading the co-hosting of our Scouting Australia podcast and leaving Jimmy down south.
What's going on here? So this could be a third opportunity within the business.
We will see. We will see, man. It's what Paulie people are saying.
Anytime you want to take this seat, you are more than welcome.
Done.
I'm more than happy to stay down in Mordor, down in the good old south. But yes, I'm just curious.
Boys,
why haven't you thought Lukey would be a suitable co-host?
I fall asleep every time he talks.
Ratings are low, Jimmy. Ratings are low, mate.
Boys, I'm very excited. Thank you very much for coming into the studio today. Off big request for Big Paulie K to do a few more episodes. They want to see more of him. We're seeing too much of Jimmy. We're seeing just enough of Big Lukey Chusin. But guys, what I wanted to bring to the table was a few different eps, getting the brains trust together, the strategist team together, and what we see so often, both on the front line with Big Jimmy and then obviously behind the closed doors and behind the closed curtain with us boys in the strategies as well. And what I really wanted to do was a segment around common investor mistakes. Now, we're going to break this down into a 3-part series, all right? And we're going to do beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And I laughed when you boys all sent me messages going, so like beginner is like 0 and then intermediate is like 1 to 2 and then advanced is like, you know, to 6 or something. I go, throw that thing right out the door.
That must have been Lukey.
Mate, I think the text history is you. I think it's you. We've graded this down, guys, in beginner between 0 to 2 properties, intermediate between 3 to 9 properties, and advanced investing being 10 plus property holding investor.
It's fair to say that's not rigid, right?
It's not rigid, but it's loose. When I look at it, I look at an intermediate sitting at a 3 to 9, and then if you're an advanced investor, you're sitting at 10 plus properties,
okay,
in my opinion. So this is the way we're going to run it, guys. And pretty much what I wanted to do was get together, bang out a few apps around this thing, and talk about the common investor mistakes so people can look out for what they may have fallen into, or maybe what they are looking at the moment, or just getting the knowledge and the leverage around this and the experience from all of us here. To avoid making these mistakes themselves as well. So I'm actually pretty excited for this thing. Obviously, the beginner had a lot of stuff in it that there might be a little bit of crossover. So guys, we don't know each other's notes here. So we're pretty much just going to start. And if there's crossover, we're just going to avoid questions or answers that have already been written in, but really wanted this raw and what we all individually see across the table as well. So speaking of the most highly sought after speaker on this table.
Including yourself.
Barring myself.
Set himself up for that.
Set himself up. Shut up, Luke. You're like, yeah, I love you, fucking Goliath. Is big Mr. Paulie Carpiers, mate. I want to throw it to you. You are the most recent, the rawest APS strategist in the team. I say you're raw. You've been doing it for a little bit now, but your portfolio, you know, as people would have heard in their story, in your story as well, it's grown. You've gone through a lot of different things. You've navigated around finance and lending and all the rest of this sort of thing as well to get yourself to a 4-property portfolio. I know you're gearing up. This year, you're going to enter the top 0.01% of investors in Australia as well. So, mate, I'd love to kick off with what are the most, you know, and I asked you boys to consolidate. Obviously, there was a huge amount that kind of got sent in. I said, boys, we've got to consolidate this week. This is going to be a 4-hour episode. Yeah. Otherwise, let's do the most consolidated, the most concise points that you see consistently, mate. I want to know, what do you see on the front line when you're doing these strategies? You do a lot of strategies with the guys that are sitting in this envelope, this beginner investor. So, man, I'd love you to kind of hit me with the most common investor mistakes that you see.
Yeah, so working with those 0 to 1 investors generally during my strategy calls, then a lot of them are coming to me with 0 property or 1 property. With 1 property, it's generally the PPOR. So at a point in time, they're looking to get that first investment property, but then when they're really looking to then accelerate their investing journey, they're looking to then leave the PPOR, start rent vesting, but then since they've already acquired that PPOR, the idea is to transition that PPOR into an investment property. Mm. So my sort of theory goes then, is that the best place to be putting, yeah, is to have an investment property at that point in time? Are we better off almost considering to sell that property? You've got a capital gains tax exemption there, and then really look to get that debt back and then accelerate the portfolio.
The debt back and the cash back.
And the cash back.
Game can be a game changer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also holding it can be a massive handicap, right? So holding that generally PPOR, it's a large debt generally, and especially if you need to release equity to continue investing, it's a lot of debt to retain and hold and try and strip out and still hold onto that asset. But a lot of people have that emotional attachment, right? Mm-hmm. But so often what we see is exactly like you said, is it the best place to invest? Generally, no. They're boarded emotionally. It's not a great investment. Even though it may have had a great run at some point. Cash in on the great run. Mm. And if you're moving on somewhere else, or whether you're buying or rent vesting or whatever the strategy is, man, I agree with you completely. The idea of offloading a primary residence, especially if it's performed, take advantage of the CGT. Yeah. Obviously, guys, everything that we say on this is not financial advice, but like with this stuff as well is seek professional advice, et cetera, et cetera. But in this scenario, you know, 99 times out of 100, you're getting your capital gains tax exemption. Mm-hmm. If you've already had a gain on it, bank the profit, move on, build the portfolio hard. I love it.
I think what we're saying is good property doesn't necessarily mean good investment. And essentially when you're buying a nice home, it's a good investment, you know, good house, you love it and you get so much emotion to it. I find it such a common thing.
You know, the other big thing I see as well is people, they get it because they've emotionally attached, especially if they've built it or they've renovated, and they've built or renovated to their taste or to a very high level. And then tenants come in and don't look after it the same way that they would. And then like there's an emotional drain on them as well, you know, getting upset about it. You can sell it in prime condition at the peak, you know, at a nice peaky point. I think it's a great idea to be cashing out, obviously, and avoiding this common investor mistake.
I was just going to say, quick curveball. What if they thought, you know what, we love this house, but we will move back into it in a few years. Like this is going to be our PPOR.
Yeah.
If they were planning to move back into it in a few years' time, as an example, would you then say, well, yeah, it makes sense, or still?
I think it always depends on your ability to continue to access debt, right? So if you hold onto that asset and redraw equity to start your journey, and then you don't have borrowing capacity to keep going, or you're continually hamstrung and limited and it's an absolute mission to get funding for you because you've held onto something with whoever knows how much debt is on it from the PPR perspective. I think it's one of those things that, like, especially if you're talking like a 5-10 year window until they'll probably move back in, it's going to be an anchor on their portfolio the whole way through. If it was for a year and their serviceability is fine and they can access the equity and it was just like a rent vesting decision, whatever, for a year or two or something like that, maybe something to come in. But for me, it always comes down to serviceability. If serviceability is going to be hampered, you want to accelerate a portfolio quickly, you need to put the axe through whatever is hampering that anchor.
Okay. That's a good start, Paulie K. Yeah. Love that.
And then continuing that trend, basically, we've got someone who's got 0 properties. And then as we are conditioned in life, we're always conditioned to take advantage of these first homeowner grants the first time we buy a property.
Free money,
apparently.
Give it to me.
So then the idea is utilize that first homeowner's grant and get yourself an investment property where you live.
And then I will invest. Do you often hear that?
Yeah,
I'm going to use the first home buyer's grant and then I'll think about investing.
Because the condition with that first home owner's grant a lot of the time is to live in it.
To live in it 6 months.
So they're buying it in their backyard essentially, living in it, and then that conversion, that transition happens.
Oh, man, first home owner grants and stamp duty exemptions, everything, it is the biggest... It's the greatest money spin that the governments can do, right? Because it helps them sell new land. It helps. So developers are chopping things up. They're getting more council rates, more stamp duties, more capital gains, all the rest of the stuff. They're doing all these things and they're getting all these additional taxes and rates and revenues and everything. And then they come in and build. So that's helping the economy, more people building and everything. And the first home buyer, especially like this happens as well. You would get this on the front line. You get parents that think they're doing the right thing for their kid and going, well, shouldn't they be doing it? Because they've got the grants. We don't want to miss out on the grants and everything. What majority of people don't realize is people target first home buyers for this product. So they inflate the product. So even though you might be getting a $15,000 grant and a $10,000 stamp duty exemption, so you think you might be 20, 25, 30 grand in front. In reality, they have probably inflated the land values by 20 to 30 grand and by the build probably a lot of the time by 30, 40, 50 grand as well. And if you're doing it as a package, even more. So it's one of these things that like it generally comes from a good place where they're trying to take advantage of it, but it's no longer on existing property, right? Almost everywhere it's no longer on existing property. When I took advantage of it nearly 15 years ago in 2009, it was on all property because the government was trying to stimulate spending in the economy. They're trying to stimulate transacting. But even then, it was double. So for me, when I got it, it had gone to 14 at the peak, right? I didn't get 14 grand grant, but it had gone to 14 in the peak. But to buy land and build, as long as you built within 12 months, they actually doubled that grant. So instead of the 14, it was 28 for new product. So, you know, what do you think that does? It spikes land values and it spikes build prices because they build that fat in, they build that buffer in because you're getting that grant as cash. And so when that's the equation, they know you can leverage that and it goes further. So it's one of these things. It's a very, very common mistake that I used to see a lot on the front end as well. And it was something I used to battle, like people would argue with me about it. And I'm like, man, they are always inflated. They're always overinflated. Like the opportunities aren't there. 10, 15 years ago, it was a different story because the land market was in more of a glut and you could build a lot cheaper than you can build now. But now the game's completely changed, you know, and builders, developers, they are intelligent people. They literally do this thing for business. They are out there to make as much money as they can.
They're not making any less than 20%. Developers have a 20% profit margin pretty much across the board. So they're factoring that into it. You're buying them and they're making the profit.
Yeah.
You're buying end product line, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And generally why it's so flat for so long, right?
Yeah.
That stock, you know, you don't get any real appreciation for ages.
Something you see a lot of the time is valves actually falling short and people actually losing their deposits because the valves fall so far short that they can't actually come up with and stump it and plug that deficit. Mm. Sometimes the grants can kind of plug it, but it means if they're valuing it short on completion, all right, you get a grant, but the property's not even worth what you've paid for it. So what was the point of doing it in the first place?
And I think people got
that don't make sense.
Yeah, that what you just said there is a perfect example. I remember when I first bought my first property, it was an investment property, and I didn't take the first home buyer's grant. But I thought in my head that the grant, I would be able to outperform the grant if I bought something that was better than that. So if you really think about it, the grant is such a small amount of money. And if you think about it, that's going to hamstring you for a decent period of time. By buying an investment property, by just simply outperforming that amount of money, is actually going to be so easy to do. So why would you do the first home buyer's grant? There's just no upside to it. I can't see any upside to it.
I think it's very much, it's just, look, to wrap this one up, because obviously we've got a lot of things here we've got to move through, but I think it's an uneducated, not even investors, an uneducated home buyer's decision to go and buy something like that. It's almost impossible to make money on these things. If you're putting the two of them together separately, that's where I used to make money. But again, I'm talking 10, 15 years ago. Like those are the good old days. They are gone from that perspective. The time will come where they work again, but not going and buying a house and land and taking advantage of with that side of things, it doesn't, yeah, exactly as Lukey says, this is the game that Lukey was in a long time ago, or before this as well, was seeing people getting burnt and stung by these things as well. So it's one of those things, very, very rare to make good money on it.
No such thing as a free lunch, Sammy boy.
Oh, I mean, you fucking get one every time you come up here, don't you, you dodgy bastard.
You've eaten a few. Anyway, Paulie K.
Yeah, so something else I see and hear a lot of is buying a holiday home as an investment option.
Oh.
So,
You know, Come on, Paulie. The dream house on the beach. You serious?
We almost don't even need to go in it. That just sells itself. How shit an idea that is.
What do you mean I can't buy a holiday home at Airlie Beach and move down into it in 10 years' time? I can't do that?
Is that going to be the best place for you to invest at the current time?
I'm going to Airbnb it.
I want to go and visit it once a year, Jimmy.
What do you think? I reckon there's the steak. Not the steak that we're going to have soon for lunch, but the steak that you put through the vampire's heart. I think when it comes to the holiday home, that's the vampire. You know what I mean? Like,
it's going to tap you out for a significant period of time.
And like, as if it's going to move you towards your goals as well. You know what I mean? Like, people listening to this, they're trying to build significant portfolios. They're trying to get themselves into a better position. It's end game. You know, holiday home is end game stuff.
Yeah, the purpose is like when I retire, I'll go and live there. Mm. That will be my retirement home.
Make your money somewhere else. Make your money investing and then go and buy once you've made the money and you can afford to do whatever you want with it. You know, go buy
them. The biggest thing, I've seen this in the past, they want to buy the holiday home now because that's where they want to live. In 15 years' time when they actually retire, they probably got grandkids. They don't want to move away from the grandkids and it never actually happens that they move there.
And they probably cop so much maintenance the whole time they own it. They're fucking sick of it by the time they're ready to go.
People's goals change is what I'm trying. Like 15 years' time, terrible idea.
Yeah, long time.
And if they invested correctly up until that point, they're going to buy a much better beach house in the end anyway.
And where they want to live, absolutely. Yeah,
All right.
Anything else, Paulie?
Yeah, so 20% deposits. So the old adage of needing a 20% deposit to get into a property.
Yep.
So where do you think that's conditioned from? Was that where did that...
Mate, I think people hear it from a conservative speaker or something like that, or they hear it from an accountant, or they hear it from their parents or something like that, or a broker or someone very conservative that says, you need the 20% deposit to do a home. I remember, we've actually spoken about this story a couple of times, my brother-in-law, so my sister's husband, when they were buying their first home, he was fixated on doing it with a 20% deposit. And the market, and I said, man, just go in there, 10, 12% deposit. This was 10 years ago. And I was like, mate, you just need to get into the market. Like the market starts moving. This was south of Sydney. And he could have bought around 300 grand. And then all of a sudden the market really started to move. And in about 6 to 12 months, it had gone up to like it was right at the start of when Sydney first started going. And I think it jumped to like 350. And he goes, I don't know how I'm going to save this thing. I said, mate, you just got to get in with that 10% deposit. And if he'd got into the 10% deposit in the first place, he would have made that extra 50 grand that it went up. So everyone tries to save the LMI component, right? They worry about the LMI. And at the moment, interest rates are higher. But if it's all the capital you've got to get in, It's I'm so glad you brought it up, because it's one of the biggest things that I see consistently that people make the mistake on, and they price themselves out of a market. Maybe there's somewhere they really want to buy, or they've got the ability to engage us to buy in the right area. They don't really know where they're buying, but they've got enough for a 10, 12% deposit, go get in, full closing costs, and get that first deal under the belt so it starts growing. You will never be able to save and outperform a quality market. So if you don't have a 20% deposit, if all you can get is that 10, 12% plus closings, get in with what you've got. Because you can never save enough to outpace a strong growth market.
That point there is so important. I talk to people
Thank
about
you,
that.
Thank you, Lukey. Thank you. Can I have one of your trophies?
No. I tell people in strategy all the time, you can't outsave a good market.
No
chance. It's not possible.
No.
So if you get in at 12%, we would rather have more properties at a higher LVR and get the growth on all of them instead of one or two with a 60, 70, 80% LVR, you're going to get a better performance on the multiple assets.
And it's a cost of doing business. Like if your interest rate's slightly higher and you're paying a bit of LMI, it's a cost of doing business. You know, and I look at, I'll go back to that story a second ago from my brother-in-law as well. And the cool thing was he learned about it. He said to me after, he goes, fuck, I wish I listened to you when you said to me about just doing it with a 10%. But his parents had burned it into his mind about doing the 20% deposit. And he didn't want to pay LMI. But it's cool because he's kind of bought a couple of investments since then and done them he pulled out the equity, done them at the 88%. So you learn from the mistakes, you know. But again, common investor mistakes. A lot of people get fixated on that, and that market would have just gone. Because that property now that he bought, he paid 350 for it. That property now would be worth probably 600, 650, something like that. If he kept trying to save for 20%, he never would have caught it. The market would have gone and he never would have been able to buy. He never would have bought.
Yeah, I think for a lot of beginner investors as well, like having that limited amount of capital to start with, you really want to stretch that capital into, you know, the second deal potentially as well.
Yeah.
So by exhausting all your funds as that 20% deposit, you're really limiting what you can do.
Mate, you want to build those foundations as quickly as possible. As you kept banging on about in your bloody investor app, I just wanted the bread and butters. I want the bread and butters. I don't want the juicy cash flow. I don't want the steaks. I like the bread and butter.
You grilled it in me, Sammy. You said you need the capital. You're always going to fall short on capital. Yeah. So I thought, you know what? How do I get that capital? Get into those growth properties.
I love it, mate. It's very true, man. The foundations are so key.
But if you're exhausting all your funds in those 20% deposits, you're just setting yourself up for failure and you're waiting maybe another year or two before the next one has to, you know, happen to save. So. Yeah.
I love it, mate. I love it.
That were really good points, Paulie K.
Is that Paulie K done and dusted?
He's a natural.
He is a natural.
I know exactly what the listeners are talking about now.
They're writing in.
Your job's in strife
He sent in a big list as well. I go, mate, we've got to pick like three or four out of this. otherwise, this thing's going to go for bloody forever. So,
should we go to Lukey?
Speaking of forever and putting us all to sleep where we may never wake up, Lukey Chusen, mate, you are up and I want you to smash. I want you to get some vim and vigor, bro. I want you to smash us with these points. What do you got for us, mate?
First one, barbecue talk.
Okay.
So many people listen to barbecue talk. My uncle's work friends, kids, kindy teacher keeps telling me, you know, this is the best place to buy. You know, mate, you're going to miss out if you don't buy here.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Where's the area?
Everyone's got a hot tip.
Mate, this area's going to go off.
I can't tell anyone. It's so secret. Like only a few people know.
Only the primary school principal knows, yeah?
Yeah, that's it. But barbecue talk's huge. People buy on the
approval. And you go to
others.
A lot of barbecues.
Mate, I fucking love it.
What are you saying? Does he love a sausage?
He loves the sausage.
He does.
He loves steak over you.
Nah, steak only, mate. Come on, mate.
Okay.
But that's so common. And so many people buy on the approval of others. You're always listening to your friends, your family. Mm. And, you know, if you're saying that you don't, you do. At the end of the day, you are influenced by other people's opinions, very close to you, generally speaking. And, you know, there's plenty of quotes, you know, you are who you surround yourself with. If you want to, the same as circle of influence, we always talk about that and surrounding yourself and putting yourself in the rooms of people that are smarter than yourself. Mm. Barbecue talk is massive for first-time investors and starter investors. And I think that's probably one of my biggest ones. And that's why I put it first. They buy on other people and that's a mistake.
Can I add something to that, right? Because that barbecue talk, everyone has an opinion and everyone feels like they have a bit of an authority because they've read something or they follow someone or something. So everyone comes from a place of they know. And I think for people listening to this, you don't have to be the expert. Like that barbecue talk, my question for people listening would be saying to that person, well, have you bought there? If so, how many properties do you own? And that will quickly tell you whether or not it's just their opinion or they have actually done it. Mm. And I think that will cut through. That'll get the through the sausage, Lukey. That'll cut straight through it.
You're going to be hacking up the lamb rack.
If there's any substance to it, don't you think?
No, absolutely. Like, that's absolutely. Yeah.
I saw Jimmy's eyes. Like, I knew Jimmy was going to take that one because he started when you said circle of influence. He was like,
yeah, because the thing is,
getting fidgety. He's going like these.
You
on.
Know what? It's like a caffeine. He's like,
if there's one thing that I leave this podcast, he's all about the circle of influence and the mindset. Because I always say this, even about myself.
Because it puts a rubber to the road.
I don't even try and find where I'm going to buy a property. And I have a decent portfolio, but I don't need to know. That's why I'm engaging someone who does. And that's why I go and see Paul and I go and see Luke or another great buyer's agent that may be out there. I engage the experts. I don't need to know.
Buyer's agent of the year, bro. That's all I got to say. Buyer's agent of the year. Go enjoy that sausage.
More of a vegan. More of a bubble and squeak.
You know what? I think it's time to bring up as a bit of a side note here, guys. I am excited for this weekend. This weekend, guys, is the APS Summit.
Ooh.
I'm pumped. I'm absolutely pumped for this event coming up.
What do you think of Branson coming? How good's that?
Yeah, he's flying in on his helicopter. It's mad.
He is, bro. That's it.
And Sammy's flying in on his as well.
I think Branson's a little bit bigger. Just a little bit bigger.
At least I got one. Whatever. Is that a helicopter, like a modeled helicopter on your head? What is that haircut, man?
It's a jet.
It's just a jet.
A nice little pointer.
We were punching through.
We were.
Barbecue talk.
Sorry, boys. I got excited about the summer.
I like the barbecue.
Next one is I need cash flow. Same as what Paulie said. I just want to expand on that a bit. Mm-hmm. So many people go, oh, I don't want to be negative. I can't be negative. I need cash flow. No. The foundation, and you touched on it as well, but your foundation is so important. Mm. A lot of people run out of equity before they run out of servicing. So that foundation and building out your bread and butters at the start is so important. I think we spoke about it a few months ago with some examples for a client doing a cash flow deal. You know, building out the one or two bread and butters and having that equity building in the background and then going and doing a cash flow deal, you know, is so important to actually building the portfolio. So the first time as in people starting out, foundation is so much more important than cash flow.
And I think just to really simplify that for people listening that are starting out, when you're buying a growth property, the whole intention and the objective is for that to grow, because you've spent so much time saving the deposit for the first deal. So that growth asset is going to enable you to pull out equity to contribute to your next deposit. Whereas if you are obviously targeting the cash flow, there may not be as much equity and then you're stuck. You can't continue to build.
It's massive. And it links into what we said before. You can't outsave a good market.
Definitely not.
It's very hard for a lot of people to save large amounts of cash, irregardless of your income. You know, you find something to spend it on. So if that equity is built in the background for you by really good growth properties, you're not having to tip in as much savings. Like, yes, it's great, but that equity is already being built for you.
Man, I had a couple of clients that were like back in the day, probably 2020, 2021, in Brisbane in particular, and they were fixated on having to do cash flow deals. And I was like, mate, let's smack out a couple of foundationals first, a couple of bread and butters. Okay, man, we can strip the equity out and let's do two of them and then we'll pull the equity out and then you'll sit on the sidelines for 12 months as you execute a cash flow deal. But you can have three properties in the portfolio. Portfolio probably be sitting at 1.2, 1.5 mil, and they're like, no, I really want to do the cash flow deal first. And I couldn't talk them around it. And it gets to a point where you can lead someone to water, you know what I mean? But you can't force them to drink it. And when it came down to it, they all called me at the end of that period because they were in the middle of Brisbane and Brisbane did this ridiculous cycle and their property value doubled. They did really, really well, but they built the granny. But because the build environment was so hard, it took like 12 to 18 months for the completion of this full thing, right? Because the councils got stuck, like everything got blocked up in council because they didn't have the workforce to deal with how much was going on. The builds went slow. Like everything just was really slow. People couldn't get materials, couldn't get trades. So like the idea of this thing, and we always say to people, 9 to 12 months is an expected turnaround time frame, especially at the moment, on something like a cash flow deal. And some of these deals blew out and took a bit longer because of that scenario. They missed out on so much potential growth because we also picked it up probably just before it turned. If we'd done that with a bread and butter, pulled the equity out 3-6 months later, did another one, pulled it out, bought another cash flow deal. Even if you paid a little bit more for the cash flow, you didn't get as much growth on that. But you picked up the first two bread and butters that maybe had gone from 300 to 600 or 400 to 800 or something. And they literally did. They more than doubled in a very, very short window, even to when we're talking all the way to now. But the cash flow deal could have been executed later on, but they were so fixated on it that they missed it. And I remember, man, some of them, they didn't even want to kind of keep investing because even though they'd done really well, they felt sick because they realized they hadn't taken the advice and they got so fixated on cash flow. And man, some of them, it was weird thing to see happen, but some of them actually sold the cash flow deals at the end, banked like 300 grand's worth of profit and then just kind of didn't invest again. And I'm just like, this doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Like even that, you could have pulled out and kept going because you've done the effort to do the deal. It was really weird. But I think because the other big thing as well is like cash flow deals aren't straightforward. You know what I mean? These are like 12-month turnaround style deals. It's not like a bread and butter. You get put in a good growth location, you buy the right property, you buy it at the right price. If you do all the right things, use the right buyer's agent, you're going to have equity in a 3-6 month window, pull it out, repeat it, rinse and repeat it, bang. You've got wins on the board. You're leveling up as an investor. And then you go smack a cash flow deal or something. It's like, all right, no worries. I can handle it a bit now. I've got other properties I can see growing. But it was almost like too much for them. I saw it happen with, it wasn't a huge amount of people, but I saw a few people kind of opt out of it after that as well. So it's interesting, you know, you've got to work through the deals and work through the processes of you an investor. And that's why when it comes down to a beginner, don't get fixated with trying to find the best strategy in the world. Either engage someone that can do this for you or find a great location, buy the right house, buy it at the right price. That will do the heavy lifting for you. If you don't have the time to do that properly, engage someone to do it for you and the heavy lifting will come from that perspective. Mm.
Really good points there, Sammy boy.
I think that's
sorry, bro, I commandeered. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stealing a few of your points. You actually started off on my third point, you're already ahead. Where you said there, I need a strategy. You definitely need a strategy, but like so many people come and they say, I need an exact plan and a model for the next 10 years. Mm. I need a 20-year plan or a 10-year plan. So I know
you can pay a fee.
I'm literally shaking my head.
You can pay a fee for a 20-year plan. I don't know how that'll do for you.
Obviously, there's so many different variables and they have to draw a line in the sand and this is an exact figure and this is an exact figure and this is an exact figure. None of the models actually end up anywhere close to what you...
All the models I've ever seen from all the other companies that do them are horseshit because they are either way too... because they have to go so conservative because it's a 20-year plan. It's such a you're never going to... It'd take you 20, 30 years to retire from property. Do the thing correctly. You can retire yourself in 10 years if you do it properly. But that's why we typically look at it from, okay, here's your goal. This is what you need.
But these are the steps that we're going to take for the next few deals to keep you moving forward. But there's so many variables in it. Incomes could increase, incomes could decrease. Anything could happen in the market, have a huge spike, have massive rental. So many things could change and happen. A 20-year game plan, it's rubbish. It has there is no purpose for this thing. Whereas if you have a goal, this is the strategy. These are the deals you need to get to the goal. This is how we keep moving forward now. And that's how I always built my portfolio. It's what always grew me massive success was going down that avenue rather than trying to make something. It's untangible. It's so many variables over a 20, 30 like, window. Yeah. Even a 10-year window, man. It's too many variables. It's got to be deal by deal.
I actually don't think they're worth, like as soon as they're printed, they're invalid. Mm. Something's changed. Interest rates have changed. Yeah. Inflation's changed. Mm. You know, they always factor growth at 4 or 5% on a long-term average. Like people have kids. People buy new cars that they weren't expecting to go. Their car shits itself and they have to buy a new car, you know. There's so many different variables there. So I generally talk to people about, you know, focusing on the next deal or two in front of you that's going to move you closer to the goal. We're very much purpose-based investing. Mm. What's this property's purpose? How are we going to use this property to get to the next property? Mm. And how is that property going to fit into the portfolio to get me closer to the goal? We're always wanting to move you closer to the goal with every purchase, not so much, hey, you're going to do this property in August 2026 for this price and this yield.
Yeah. We always look at the next 2 to 3 deals to make the decision what we need next.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. You look 2 to 3 deals ahead to make the decision on what the next property is, and then that facilitates what we're going
to
be doing.
Because it's quite – sorry, Paulie. I was just saying
it's important to be flexible in this sort of position when you are building a portfolio, understanding that there are moves and pivots to make throughout the journey. If we're so focused on just, you know, this deal at this time, this deal at that time, if something changes, not just in your own personal situation but in the economy – you know, you're so focused on that one deal. Mm. And if it can't happen, are you going to be able to shift or are you just going to be able to, you know?
There's way too many variables. You know what you do? You ask someone, if someone's to write you that plan, are you going to pay a significant sum of money for that plan? How many people you retired off this plan? Mm. Show me some stats. How many people you retired off the plan?
Give me 20 more years and I'll let you know.
Yeah.
in 20 years. Shut up, mate. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, shit. The irony I find about it is it's supposed to make people feel comfortable giving them a 20-year plan, right? But in effect, it might be overwhelming because you're thinking, shit, this is over 20 years. Mm. Whereas all we're saying is put the tunnel vision on. Let's focus on what we can do now, today. And yes, we're going to look at the 2 to 3 properties thereafter. But let's keep the focus narrow. Focus on what we can do now. And that's actually going to give you more confidence to make the next move so you don't get overwhelmed.
Mm. You want to know something, Jimmy? Who wants to retire in 20 years? You got a shit plan anyway.
I know, I don't want to do that. I'm going to be 45 by then.
No, you're going to be 3,045. Mate, who wants to retire in 20 years?
Jimmy will be fully grey in 20 years.
He'll be dead in 20 years.
Might be.
Nah,
might
Jimmy. Be. I reckon he had a green smoothie this morning at breakfast. So
yeah.
I reckon
he had a tropical.
Yeah, a tropical.
Nice tropical. There's a little surprise in there. There's a little surprise.
Not enough.
There. Was a surprise. Was there a sausage
fly?
There was
a fly. There was a proper fly.
Proper fly as opposed to a fake fly.
I hoped it was a fake fly.
It was legit.
Proper. Just like the sausage. What else you got, Lukey?
Nah, that's it. Top three. Bang through them. And Sam jumped and bit at the last one. I was happy with that.
He did well. Yeah, he did well.
Tell me, boy, what have you
doing game plans?
Have you got a few from your side?
Mate, I've got a few. Paulie took one of them, which I actually loved. Mm. I've got a few there, but Paulie, one in particular, mate, that was a very good point, mate. So well done. Well done. I pipped me to the post. Man, I think the biggest things I'll run through here is not getting educated or having a game plan and leading into these next few things. Like not getting educated, having a game plan leads to incorrect deals, whether you're buying in the wrong location, so buying in your own backyard or buying where Bob from the Barbie and all the rest of it, you know, has given you the hot tip on where to buy that just doubled in the last 2 years. You know what I mean? Like buying in that, yeah, not kind of getting educated around that or seeking someone to help you with the education piece around that as well. Paying overs is the biggest thing. So people thinking that they can go out there and do these things themselves. And so often they don't understand market value, and sales agents are very, very good at selling, right? Their literal job is to sell every single day of the year. And the idea that you can kind of go out there and understand a market after looking at realestate.com for a couple of weekends and then, you know, trying to negotiate something over the phone with 50 other people bidding on it, you are always going to pay overs in that scenario. It's almost impossible not to. So That's kind of like, for me, that's just the piece of like not getting educated, having correct game plan, having correct team, getting help, you know, when you're kind of starting out as well. I think that's probably like one of the biggest mistakes I see when people come through, where they bought something a couple of years ago or recently or whatever. That's really one of the biggest things. All those things kind of sort of tying into that one piece of not getting educated, pulling the trigger on the wrong deal. The next thing, any points on that you guys want to throw in?
No, I think you nailed that. The due diligence, it's all or everything about that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I think like leveraging off the professionals, like you say, it's good to have the education piece, but leverage off the professionals in their expertise.
Yeah, but I mean that's why like what we do is we kind of like almost like bundle up what we do, right? We have the Scouting Australia podcast where you guys get to get a lot of free information, free content to level up as an investor. We source for so many of our listeners as well within Australian Property Scout. And not only do we source, but we strategize with clients. We put them where they need to go. We help them with finding the correct deal. And what are the next 2, 3, 4 deals they need in their portfolio? What is the next one that we're going to source for you right now? So we keep them on the right track to keep moving them towards their goals. And then obviously with School of Property as well, you know, and we have that and a lot of people kind of do them together. And even though they're using us as a buyer's agent, they want to get educated. They want to learn all this sort of stuff as well to then take their knowledge base to the next level so that they understand this stuff. So they're not purely relying on us all the time for the strategy. They're kind of formulating and gaining the knowledge around it as well, but they still need us to pull the trigger and help them build it. And I guess one thing has popped into my head at the last bit there as well is even the live summits. You know, like again, it's our way of essentially giving back, trying to help people, you know, get super motivated, keep moving towards these goals and building these things as well. When you're surrounding yourself with all this stuff, even if that is the extent of the education piece you get, but you've got a team pulling the trigger on the right deals for you, man, you're going to succeed. It's impossible not to succeed if you're using the right people, getting educated with the right content. Moving on. My number two, that was a pretty action-packed, that one. If I say myself, I don't think Jimmy's going to beat that one. buying with their full borrowing capacity. So one of the biggest things that I see is someone going out there and they'll buy a property with their full borrowing capacity. So they go out there and they get, I've got a pre-approval for $850,000 to purchase at $850,000. And they go out and they buy a property for $850,000.
Just sometimes $860,000, $870,000.
Sometimes. And stretch it. Yeah, they full stretch it to the absolute limit. And that, again, it feeds into property, to comment one of, not getting educated around what they should be buying and not seeking probably, again, professional opinions or advice around how to use that money as well and how to put that out there in the marketplace to get the biggest and best result for your money. But that's probably the biggest thing that I see is people come in and they've bought one deal. I actually had a client it was at the end of last year. Actually, it was about a year ago I started working with this fella, and he and his wife, very low income earners. And long story short, they had a borrowing capacity. This is why I'm actually using that number. They had a borrowing capacity of $850,000. And they went out and another buyer's agent bought them a property for $850,000 that was running for $500,000 a week. They were bleeding like $25,000 a year on this thing. And they were both making like $60,000 a year. They moved back in with their parents so they could get that borrowing capacity as much as they could. He's maxed it to the absolute nines. They told me as well, he's overpaid for the thing. So they realize after he's paid too much for it, it's bleeding them $25,000 a year in negative cash flow. And I came in and we just had a very direct chat about this thing. And they just said, I'm not taking this as financial advice. What would you do in this situation? I'm like, man, 12 months, you guys are like, you're going to go bankrupt. You're going to eat all your savings out. You don't have savings because you're on such low income earners. They had to go through the process. They sold that down and they started again. They started with us. They did 2 deals. I won't talk exactly what we sort of did, but we essentially kept everything net slightly positive from what we did. They did equity release on the first bread and butter, rolled it into a third. They just bought 3 deals, but their portfolio is sitting net slightly positive even at current interest rates. And for them, it's massive. They've now got over $1 million in the marketplace growing for them. It's something like 1.2, 1.3 mil. They're in a net positive position. They're in better growth markets than the other singular asset was, but now they've got a pathway forward to keep building the portfolio as well. So holding on to that one asset in 12 months, they probably would have had to fire sale it and sell it for less. Instead, they sold it when they could still hold it at the moment. And I think they didn't quite get their whole money back. I think they washed their face of the stamp duty and the buyer's agent's fee. I think that's pretty much all they lost, but they got the rest of the cash out. That's how we started this thing and kept building it as well. So it's one of those things that like so often that incorrect advice, you get it from the wrong person and they do something like that, like max out your full borrowing capacity. Whether you're a low income earner or not, like that is not the way to go. You need to build, what are the correct properties you need in the portfolio? Perfect. What are the next 1, 2, 3 deals you need in there? And then you build them in methodically. Someone getting a pre-approval and going spending it in the max.
It's almost like just connecting the dots for the audience there. Yeah. A more expensive property isn't a better investment. So I think their natural reaction is, well, 850, I'm going to get a really good property for that. So they're completely confused as to what they actually need.
Yeah.
And so I think that getting that out of your head is the first key thing.
And that's where that education piece is so important, because when you start to understand it, like so many of our clients and listeners of this would be more educated than 95% of buyers agents out there, the other buyers agents that are out there, because they've never done it. And they're faking it. They're trying to fake it till they make it. And they're buying incorrect properties for people. They don't understand it because they've never been through this before. Like that's the beautiful part of obviously what you guys have learned and known with us as well. Obviously you boys here at the strategy table. But like going through this, you're literally learning off the way that I built it on a very low income and how it worked and the things that didn't work. And so that's the methodology. That's the strategy and the way that we build the portfolios for these clients. Mm. And that's how we put people on the right trajectory.
And where you say that 850 could be the most premium top of the tree property in one market,
yeah,
and then be the absolute dump of another.
100%.
You know, so there's such a massive discrepancy between what actually 850 can buy you.
Yeah.
So I don't think an 850 is a great. And it's more so touching on your point. A higher price point property doesn't mean a better property. It could be the worst property in that market, or it could be the best property in another, or the middle of another. So it just doesn't make sense.
But quite simply for those people, it was just
so it's almost like in that situation, that person should have asked their broker, how does this impact my ability to borrow again?
Yeah.
And that question alone would have maybe saved them. I think, well, no, you're going to
be tapped out. Good broker, because obviously they worked with the broker and the buyer's agent. Good broker, good buyer's agent should be able to help them with those decisions 100%. As well and keep them on track. My final point, getting fixated on rates. So often one of the massive things I see, it's a massive beginner thing, just being like, oh, I don't want to go with this person or this bank or that bank or whatever because, oh, the rates are 0.3% higher. And it's like, mate, you have to look at the utility of the bank that we're using and the reason that we're using them for. I don't care about 0.3, 0.5. In COVID, I bought paying 2.5% higher interest rates than almost everyone else because I low-docked the shit out of my portfolio. Made about 3-4 million in growth off the back of those properties that I picked up during that window. But I paid an extra 2% in interest, which is a fair bit. It was a fair bit. But like the cost difference of what it cost me compared to what it made me. That's the way I look at everything, right? What is something going to make me off what I spend? And if I'm going to put it out there and something's going to cost me, all right, it's going to cost me this little bit extra, but this is how much I'm going to make in capital growth, no brainer. Don't look at what something's going to cost you. Have a look at what it will make you.
Fantastic.
That's my points, boys. That's my points. Tony boy.
Jimmy, think we're done.
You got anything?
Oh, you want me to?
Have you got anything?
Well, lucky for you boys, of course I've got a few little points.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in once again to the Scouting Australia podcast.
Well, it's interesting that you put me at the end, Sammy, because, you know, I'm just herding you all in and just picking up the scraps, making sure that everyone gets their job done. But there was a couple of key points here, Lukey, that I thought, just connecting a couple of the dots, just really quick.
Let's go.
Emotional decisions, right? Just making sure. Do not let your emotions come into this decision. And I've done this before. That is the fastest way to make the wrong decision. The numbers do not care. So do not make any decision other than what the numbers are actually telling you. So that's the first key point. The second one, it's not a one-man journey. And at first, when you're starting out, you're thinking, I have to do everything. I have to do the research. I have to find out, how should I set it up? Who do I speak to in terms of money? So understand that you need to get the best team around you. That is, that one decision of getting the right team often will lead you to making the right research and doing that because you're asking questions of your accountant or your broker or I'm thinking of doing this. What do you think? And if they can't give you the answer, then you need to see someone else, right? So understanding the right people in your team. It's not a one-man journey. The other one I find is property management. Getting the wrong property managers and trying to shop around to save a little percent. You know, thinking, oh, no, I'm not going to go with Lukey because Paulie K is 0.5% cheaper. But Lukey's actually the better property manager. He's going to get me the better rent. He's going to look after my tenant better.
Lower vacancies.
Yeah, 100%. That is the worst thing that people do.
That 1% that people try and save, they end up losing 10% because there's wrong, sometimes a lot more. If you get the wrong property manager, you have extended vacancies, you get a lower rent, you get a shit quality tenant that you got to turn over again. The journey can be, for one, it can ruin your journey, but for two, it can cost you a lot more than saving that 1%.
Yeah, 100%. The next point is being impatient. And for a lot of us in the table here, we're not the most patient people, some more impatient than others, not looking at anyone in particular.
Mate, that's rich coming from you. That is rich coming from you.
But this is a long-term goal and a long-term game. This actually rewards people who appreciate delayed gratification because all of your decisions are for the future. And so if you can get your head around that, that this isn't a quick win game and that you are in for the long haul and delay that gratification to get a better outcome, you will definitely make a better decision. Mm. So that impatience thing is so, so important. And my final point, guys, is about self-belief. Because when you're starting out, the odds you believe are stacked against you, right? You think this is all too hard. The reality is you can do it because someone else who has come from a much worse position than you, who's had less money than you, who's had less opportunities than you, less education than you, has made it.
Mm.
So if they can do it, there is nothing stopping you. So if you have that self-belief to know that you can do it, you will find a way. And don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it, because if you really want it, the difference between taking action and not taking action is the difference between do you think it's a good idea or do you really want it, right? And if you really want it, you will take action. And that's my final point.
Jimmy, that was terrible. No, mate, that was great. Honestly, that was really good.
He snuck in a mindset.
Yeah, I know. You and I looked at each other. We both tapped our heads.
Here's the mindset.
Mate, that was great.
Well, the reason that point, Lukey, the reason is you can have all the tools, all the tricks, all the contacts. You can have everything because I know what it's like. I had all those people at a certain point and didn't do anything. So unless you have that self-belief to do.
I'm going to throw one extra thing in there as well, is one of the other big things, and it feeds in really well with what you were saying just there, but is pulling the trigger. So one of the biggest things we see with common investors coming in with zero properties, or maybe they got one, maybe they bought the primary residence 20 years ago in Sydney and they had all this equity and then they watched the market go past and they go, oh, it's never going to happen again. And then it happened elsewhere and all the rest of it. And they never pulled the trigger. Not pulling the trigger is one of the, I wouldn't say it's the biggest, but it is a very, very common mistake I see a lot of people come through with. And I've seen so much in the past where, man, I wish I did this 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. They have all these regrets about, I wish I pulled the trigger so long ago, and they never do. And it's one of those things, man, you've got to have the belief. You can't let yourself be talked out by other people because, man, you get to your deathbed. And the biggest thing is one of those things that they always say, when you get to your deathbed, you do not want to have regrets. You don't want to go, I wish I bought that property. I wish I bought that one property when I knew I should have, but someone talked me out of it. Bob from the barbecue talked me out of it. He said, nah, man, you want to go brand new. You want to buy a house and land in whoop, whoop, 100%, bro, you want to buy this. And you got turned off from doing what you wanted to do because old mate who's got one property more than you told you to go and do that or none. And man, you get thrown off your course. If you seriously commit to this thing and you seriously want to do this thing, do not let anyone talk you out of it. Ever. And that's one of the biggest mistakes I see where people come through with nothing or one or two or something like that. They bought one and then they wanted to go into the second and they'd done all right on the first, but then they didn't because everyone talked them out of it, or they've done none and then people talked them out of it. So often people get talked out of, and you might be listening to this and you might be going, that's me. I get talked out of all the time. I got talked out of before the COVID boom and I would have made all this money and all the rest of it. Don't think that just because you've missed a boom, it's not going to happen again. There are always places worth putting your money into to get a result. So I hope, if nothing else from this whole episode, we can inspire one person who sat in the sidelines and has had that belief or has been talked out of it before, can get inspired to go, you know what? I'm going to have a crack. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to buy a property. I'm going to see what happens. And worst case, I lose 50 grand, 100 grand, whatever it is, which isn't a small amount of money. But what about the best case? Because when you're lying on your deathbed, in 50 years, you're not going to be thinking about the 50, 100 grand, which in 50 years is going to be nothing in the scheme of things at that point in time. You're going to think about the chance you took and where it took you, because you buy the right property, right price in the right location, it is going to take you to another level.
The regret will always weigh more than making that mistake and losing that bit of money. It will always.
That's so often the mistakes, but it's an expensive experience or an expensive lesson that then sets you up for future planning. Success, right? Yeah. It's an expensive mistake, but whatever it is, what it is, you keep moving forward. That persistence, that commitment, that's what will take you to a different level and keep going. Sorry, Lukey,
I
cut you off.
I was just going
to
bring up, like, one of the fan favorite episodes was Jakey's investor story, and he was talking about that exact thing. You know, he sold and he made a loss, but he learned something so valuable.
Yeah, 100%.
And he was like, I'll never do that again. Mm-hmm. But he then turned that into a win. But it's not as if he sat there and dwelled on it. He pulled the trigger. He had a crack. He swung the bat. There's an old baseball analogy, just keep swinging. Like, you strike out, go again. Keep swinging. Like, you have to keep going. Yeah. Like, you can't just dwell on it. You have to, at some point, you got to get your toes wet and jump in.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, Lukey, those sort of mistakes, they're lessons. So you talk about leveling up as an investor as well. So if you don't approach those mistakes as lessons and that allows you to level up, that's, you know, you're only going to benefit yourself moving forward.
You'd prefer to be a half-assed investor that had a crack and you had a couple of properties under your belt than the most educated person who knows everything about property who never pulled the trigger.
That's right.
Because I know who's going to have more money and have a bigger portfolio and who it's not going to take 20 years to retire.
I think we nailed it, boys.
I think we're good. Anything else?
All good.
I'm happy.
Paulie K, mate, thank you very much for jumping on and giving us a special guest appearance. Mate, if the people love you, we're going to bring you back on for the next one, but it's going to go
I'm
to
sure
a
sure they will.
We're going to get the polls going again.
I'm sure
they
will.
Nah, it's really good to be back up here, guys. Just another house fire was put out before, so.
There we go, mate. There we go. Boys, thank you as always for coming into the studio. It's been an absolute pleasure. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed the episode and I hope I get to see a heap of you on the weekend at the live summer event. We're going to be there. We're going to be bringing the A-game. We're going to bring the vibe. We're going to bring the energy. We're going to bring the content. I hope I get to see all of you guys there listening in, seeing there's so much stuff going on. I'm not even going to bother listing it right now, but I hope I get to see all of you there. And until next week, guys, it's another Scouting Australia podcast.